You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism, broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
And here is the travel guy, Roy Lowy. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Mike. You're listening to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network, TTRN.com, and on the World Travel and Dining Channel. My guests today are Evan Eggers, Kay Harwell Fernandez, Susan Wright, Stephanie Moreland. In fact, Evan Eggers is out of town. He's on a cruise, so we're going to play a pre-recorded segment as soon as we come back.
This is the story of Bob and Elaine. The daily grind was driving them insane.
We need to get away. A change of location. Not just a trip, but an exciting vacation.
You're right. Pack your bags. The ride's nice and short. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport.
Fly Sky Value nonstop from Gary Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots. Orlando, St. Pete Clearwater, Tampa, Mesa, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary Chicago Airport is quick as can be. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Flying Sky Value is the way to go.
For hassle-free flights that save lots of dough.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after.
Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
Mr. Evan Eggers, president of ShoreCruise.com, is with us and with the latest happenings on the cruise scene. Good morning, Evan.
Good morning, Roy.
Well, lots happening out there.
Yes, never a dull moment, and this is no exception, the past couple of weeks.
I mean, just some of these things, the mere fact that they found, well, first of all, the celebrity brings a den whale into port on its bow, which was quite amazing.
Yeah, that was a surprise all the way around. That's very uncommon. So the large crew, well, any large vessel, really, you know, people look at the vessel sitting in the water, and you see how the bow, the front of the ship meets the water. What many people don't realize is a huge bulbous nose just under the water line that sticks well out in front of the ship that helps it maintain its hydrodynamic shape and slice through the water cleanly. Well, that bow apparently picked up a dead whale on the Celebrity Summit sailing back into Seward, Alaska in this past week. And the scientists are scratching their heads. There are some people who say, well, the whale is almost certainly dead when the ship hit it. And there are others who aren't so sure, and they're, of course, doing a necropsy on the whale to find out what the story is. But, you know, the ship had no idea that anything was amiss or that they'd hit anything until they arrived back in port.
Yeah, I thought I heard that they thought they felt the thump or something, but I guess that's not unusual at sea. Obviously, as you say, they didn't realize it until they got into port.
No, apparently the longshoremen on the pier who were there to, you know, help tie the ship up said, hey, guys, there's a little something wrong here. And it was a 30, 40-foot humpback, and they're an endangered species, of course, so it's sad
right,
and surprising.
Is. Now, there are a couple of very other unusual things that happened. One is they apparently found the body of that woman who was lost overboard.
Well, that's right. That was out in Italy. This is a woman who went overboard about a month ago in July sometime. And it's, as you know, it's somewhat unusual for usually people go overboard and that's the last they're seen or heard of, whether they're, you know, it's sometimes they fall overboard accidentally because they've been drinking or you know, who knows why, but generally that's the last they're ever seen or heard of. In this case, the woman's body was found on shore, and hopefully that provides her family some sense of closure. And, you know, I'll deliver the same message I do whenever we discuss people going overboard, is that the balcony of any tall place, whether it's a hotel building or a cruise ship, is not to be trifled with.
Right, and exactly. They complimented the cruise line on the way it was handled, and the family was pleased in that respect.
Yes, exactly.
And now we're covering all of these unusual things. Let's go to the situation where there were two arrests. One where the executive secretary was on Royal Caribbean was arrested for getting comp cruises for friends and family over the years, but she charged them and pocketed the money.
Yeah, there are two stories in the news this week, and there's, I know all the years I've been in the business, I've never heard of anything like either of these, but here we are with two of them.
Exactly.
And the one of them is, yes, this woman, who was an executive secretary working at Royal Caribbean, worked there for 15 years. The police are saying, in Miami that she booked hundreds of cruises for friends and family on a complimentary basis, using her, you know, her employee capabilities of getting her friends and family on occasionally for free cruises.
Right.
But meanwhile, she was actually charging her friends and family money to go on board and pocketing the money.
Jeepers. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, to give a free cruise to your family and friends, but to charge them as well. Where is that coming from? You know.
Oh, I know. And there's, you know, the news stories don't say. I imagine that people who work for the cruise lines do have, you know, some privileges in that regard, and getting, you know, perhaps getting friends or family members on board last minute cruises that haven't sold out, which is totally reasonable.
Right. As they do with the airlines as well.
That's right. The same story there. But the police say they seized more than $250,000, and say that there's hundreds of thousands more than that still missing. So this woman's been running a very tidy business working at Royal Caribbean.
And then the chief purser on the Sapphire Princess, he gets arrested.
Yeah, actually, this is Elisha. It's a woman who was arrested and escorted off Sapphire Princess when the ship arrived in Ketchikan. Apparently, since May, money had been going missing from the ship's safe. And, of course, the ship was investigating it and eventually found the money in this the chief purser's cabin in her stateroom. And she was providing some excuses as to why it was not illogical for her to have $400,000, $500,000 in her stateroom, but of course they're not buying it.
Well, I mean, just everybody keeps $400,000 or $500,000. You know,
yeah, that's right. In a cardboard box at the end of her bed. That's right.
Well, you never know what's going to come up during the week.
You got to have something salted away for a rainy day.
Well, I mean, but these are unusual stories, and so I thought we'd just start out with them. But let's get to the more fun stuff now. For Halloween, Carnival is doing this special a promotion featuring onboard trick-or-treating and a costume contest, I understand.
Yeah, this is a wonderful idea. So basically every Carnival cruise that's sailing between October 9th and October 31st will have this called a Frightfully Fun promotion going on board, where, among other things, they'll be showing scary movies, sharing ghost stories, and the two things that sound the most fun to me, you can actually go trick-or-treating on board, and they're having a costume contest.
That'll certainly be interesting, knocking on doors with a little bag.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it says kids up to 14 years old will be invited to go trick-or-treating through all the public areas of the ship.
Yeah, that should be lots of fun. They're really getting more and more involved with activities for kids these days, aren't they?
Oh, they are, and it's a logical thing. I mean, people who are sailing on around Halloween, I'm sure they're kind of, you know, thinking, well, we don't want to miss the fun of Halloween back home. Well, now they don't need to.
Yeah, it's all really good stuff. Now, what about the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative? I'm not really up to date on that. You say it's been moved back.
Oh, it's good for you for not paying attention, because it changes every 2 weeks, for Pete's sake. I tell you, Roy, the government just can't decide what they're doing. Now, the funny thing is that those of us in the travel business have known that passports were going to start being required for cruises essentially
right.
at the end of this year.
Right.
However, those were always proposed rules, and this new change is still a proposed change. So nothing has ever been locked in, and there's so many different people arguing about what makes sense. It's a constantly moving target. So ever since late 2005, the proposed schedule has been that anybody who's on a cruise that comes back into the U.S. that ends after December 31st, 2006, would need to have a passport.
Right, and I think that applied to airlines as well. It was a general requirement, I think.
That's right. I think it didn't apply to land, like the Canada-U.S. land border, I think, didn't apply for another year.
Right.
That's right. But for air and cruise, it applied. So what they've done now is that the latest tentative change, it's been approved by one House of Congress but not the other, is that they're moving the schedule a week back so that it won't, so people who are doing holiday trips won't need to worry about it. So the current proposed date, and again, it's just a proposed date when passports would be required, is for trips that end on January 8th, 2007 or later.
And to make that clear, that everyone will require a passport no matter what the foreign port is by that date.
That's right. If you're going to Bermuda, to the Caribbean, to the Bahamas, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You need a passport. All these places that you used to not need a passport as a U.S. citizen, now you will.
Right. And even it's getting to walk across borders, whether it be Canada, Mexico, is also going to fall into that category at some point.
That's right. A year later.
Right.
And a passport, you know, anybody who's traveled quite a bit, you know, a passport is always your best choice anyway. Even if it's not required, a passport is the best. It speeds you through immigration and customs.
And good ID.
But yeah, that's right. But for people who are planning on traveling toward the end of the year, they should keep an eye on this. And really, to avoid any kind of last-minute rush on passports based on where these rules finally end up, just go get a passport now. That's the advice.
Good advice. So. Tell us about Crystal teaming up with this Cleveland Clinic on the health cruise.
Yeah, this is something that the Cleveland Clinic, which of course is a very well-known health facility, has done before with Crystal. And they're on December 5th, they're doing a 10-day Caribbean health and fitness cruise. They're going to have doctors on board from the Cleveland Clinic. They're going to have experts on yoga, Tai Chi, Pilates, and even a PGA golf pro, because we all know walking around 18 holes is good walking exercise. So they're doing things, you know, both for people who are, you know, really into fitness and people who are just looking to restore life balance, as they call it, through seminars, wellness programs, and fitness-focused shore excursions on the trip. So, you know, it's pretty neat. It's a round-trip cruise from Miami going to the Southern Caribbean.
Now, what's the update on the Celebrity, you know, with the Affinity cruise? They went in, they had some problems with the two pods that were malfunctioning.
That's right, that's right. The Infinity, like other ships in that class, has two propulsion pods that are mounted under the ship. And the good news, of course, is those pods are very efficient and do wonderful things to the ship's maneuverability and handling. The bad news is when something goes wrong with one of these propulsion pods, the ship generally has to be taken out of service. And that's what's happening in this case. They've had a malfunction in one of the two pods, and so Celebrity decided to cancel the September 13th sailing to replace it. So, you know, it's one of those things that happens with these pod ships. And in the meantime, the ship is sailing a little slower than normal. So there have been some other itinerary changes, like there's a 15-day Transcanal transit that's been shortened to 14 days in the meantime.
Right.
And, of course, Celebrity's providing some onboard credits and future cruise certificates and whatnot to people.
Right, and it's going to depart from San Francisco one day later.
Exactly. That's the way they decided to shorten it.
And I guess they're going to miss Cabo San Lucas. And as you say, there's going to be a... I guess they're going to have, you know, this a credit of, what, $200 or something like that? Or
that's right. There's a little a token to make the people know that they are an apology for having shortened their trip by a day.
Exactly. Let's see. What else is happening out there? Royal Caribbean is going to have this, is launching this gift certificate program as well.
Yeah, this is interesting. Royal Caribbean, this is something I've been pestering about personally for quite some time. They've never had a gift certificate program for consumers. They had a gift certificate program for businesses, for example, to reward a high-performing salesperson, but never for consumers. And now people can buy gift certificates for their loved ones, friends, and family for whatever reason for a gift certificate for Royal Caribbean Cruise, which is good. I mean, they should have been doing that all along, and it's good they finally did do it.
Yeah.
So that's maybe a nice holiday gift if people are looking for a cruise-related holiday gift. It's a good idea.
Now, I understand that Carnival Cruise Lines announced that the Carnival Freedom is going to be operating year-round, 7-day cruises from the Port of Miami beginning in November 2007, which will be the newest fun ship, I guess, to operate from that port.
Yeah, that's true. And it's always nice to see, you know, it's always a bigger, better, stronger, faster with the cruise line sailing into the Caribbean and out of Miami and Fort Lauderdale. So, you know, Carnival's definitely jumping into the fray by announcing the Freedom will be, their newest ship Freedom will be staying down there.
Right. And then I guess... there will be a bunch of new exciting Caribbean itineraries, I should think. The fifth in Carnival's Conquest class, the Freedom, will offer an array of exciting onboard amenities and facilities, including 22 lounges and bars with dramatic interiors inspired by prominent designers' themes and styles employed over the past decades and centuries. So that's going to be kind of exciting, isn't it?
Well, it is, and, you know, Carnival, their ships are definitely an evolution in progress. As you get on the newer and newer ships, they just bring so much different excitement on board each of their vessels. It's, you know, it's nice. They're all very, have a very different feel, and they learn from all their past ships, and each new one, and the Freedom will be no exception, is more fun than the last.
Evan, as always, it's a pleasure, we thank you for sharing all this great information with us, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Terrific. Thanks, Roy. Have a great show.
See you later. Bye. Evan Eggers, O2Cruise.com. For those that haven't checked out the site, do so. A very user-friendly website for those interested in cruising.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000.
USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, Fernandez will introduce us to some wholesome fun in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Good morning, Kay.
Good morning. Thanks for having me this morning.
You're out in the mountains today.
I am indeed.
Well, that's great. It's a great article entitled Welcome, Wholesome Fun in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And you started off that, if you remember, I'm a little bit country and I'm a little bit rock and roll. Well, I didn't know that.
A long time ago, I think back in the 70s, Donny and Marie Osmond sang that song about I'm a little bit country and I'm a little bit rock and roll, and I thought that was a good segue into Pigeon Forge because you get a little bit of both when you're there.
Well, that's great, and of course, this is all set in the backdrop of the Great Smoky Mountains.
A beautiful setting. You couldn't ask for a better setting with the Smokies in the background.
And well, let's kind of walk us through this, if you will. You're talking about the travel and tourism and hospitality industry combined now represent the largest industry on the planet, which is very, very true. And as you say, the saying goes, the only real change occurs in the village.
Right, right. And that did indeed happen in Pigeon Forge. I think the strong tourism base began about 25 years ago, which in the scheme of things isn't that far back. And Dolly Parton had a lot to do with bringing tourism to Pigeon Forge when she established Dollywood.
And the tourism base, as you say, with 25 years, when the first settlers in the late 1700s traveled along the Pigeon River and formed this community.
Right. Pigeon Forge was originally a farming community. In fact, it still is quite rural, in the surrounding areas. It was named after the passenger pigeons that fed on the nuts of the beech trees that lined the riverbanks along the Pigeon River. And Isaac Love was a pioneer back in 1820, and he established an iron forge as the town's first business. And then his son built a mill about 10 years later. And today the old mill still stands, and it's a National Historic Site. And it still is in operation, and it still produces flour and cornmeal products.
That's terrific. And you say next door is a not-to-be-missed old mill restaurant. We always get into these conversations at lunchtime.
About food. That's right around lunchtime. But it's great southern cooking. The standards of biscuits and gravy and grits and fried chicken, and it's very good.
Some of my favorites. Let's just look at the Dolly Parton influence. How did that all come about? Was she actually from that area?
Yes, she's from Sevier County, and she joined forces with an entertainment group that had already had a theme park there, and then she put her imprint on this theme park, and it shows throughout the park, and it's just like Dolly herself. It's very wholesome. It's a lot of down-home fun, and it's good for the entire family.
And for those that are listening at home, if you go to our website, TTR, well, you're on the website if you're listening at home, but if you go to Kay's article, there's some really super photos there, and as she said, that this encompasses 125 acres, Dollywood, and it's open from the 1st of April through the end of December. And as you say in the article, it offers 30 rides and attractives, festivals, special events, live entertainment, elaborate shows, and most people have heard of it. I've never been there, but everyone that has said they just love it. In fact, we have one of the Dolly Parton the dining show, the what is it called, the Dixie Stampede, we have in Orlando as well.
Yes, absolutely, right.
So they, lots of rides?
Yes, and a lot of musical entertainment.
Right.
It runs the gamut from country and bluegrass to mountain and gospel. And they're also known for a lot of special events and festivals held throughout the year. Of course, there's the backdrop of the Smokies, which is great.
Right.
They also have demonstrations of craftsmen who take you back to yesteryear. They show you how the centuries-old crafts were done. They have leather making and blacksmithing, glass blowing and wood carving. And for a lot of people who don't know how these traditions came about, you know, you can watch a demonstration and see all the hard work that goes into these crafts.
And I'm looking in your article, there's a great photo with the mountains and the clouds in the background. It's absolutely absolutely gorgeous. So
it really is lovely. And then the Dollywood opens up in the spring, and it's very, very nice there in the spring.
Now let's talk just a little bit about while we're on to the Dollywood thing.
Sure.
On the Dixie Stampede and Dinner Show, a lot of people that may not have been there might like to hear of just what it's all about.
Dolly Parton started Dixie Stampede also, and that very much has Dolly's imprint on it. It's set in an arena, and you watch a show of horses and trick riders. They have musical entertainment and a lot of special effects, and there's a lot of homespun humor thrown in. They have ostrich races and racing pigs, and you can't help but laugh at it.
Exactly.
And as far as the meal itself, you eat with your hands, so that's why they encourage you to stomp your feet if you are enjoying yourself.
Great.
So it
great.
Is a lot of fun.
Yeah, great down-home country stuff.
Absolutely.
A little bit about the culture of the community, if you will, about Pigeon Forge.
Pigeon Forge is fairly small. It's very easy to get around. There's the parkway that goes right through town. And it's about 5 miles long, and there are traffic lights at each. And those are your markers. If someone tells you that such and such is at traffic light number 3, then you know exactly where to find it. It's very easy.
That's great. And what about special events?
Pigeon Forge has about 16 special events each year, which when you think about it is an awful lot. But they do them all very well, and many of them are award-winning, such as Winterfest and Saddle Up. They have a storytelling festival every year and a quilt fest every year. Winterfest is great. The whole town just lights up in Christmas decorations and lights, and it's just a lovely event.
And I think it's important that you mention in the article that these prices are not jacked up, and they fit almost every moderate budget.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, you know, if you're looking for an upscale experience, a Ritz-Carlton kind of experience, you won't find it here. This is a place for just wholesome fun, a place where you can spend, moderate amount on just about everything. And I think that means a lot to people, especially nowadays when you're watching your wallets there.
Well, and gasoline prices have gone up, and everything else has kind of skyrocketed. So, yes,
it all comes into the mix.
Yeah, and especially with families, you know, you want to go, you want to have some fun, and get down and have a little barbecue, whatever it is, as you say, biscuits and gravy, and walk out of there with a smile on your face, not an empty wallet.
Right, that's right. You don't have to check your wallet. But you know. Just because it's wholesome, that doesn't mean things are mediocre. Things are done very well here. There are a lot of talented folks in all the shows, and there's a lot of activities as well.
Now, you also mentioned that there are some new ventures came into fold this past year.
Yes, Wonder Works, and I believe there's also one in the Orlando area as well. It combines science with entertainment, and they've kind of put the tagline, Amusement Park for the Mind, and I think that describes it very well. And it's not just for kids, it's for all age groups where you can go through and learn as you're having some fun.
And they have a dinner show as well.
Yes, and this is another one that's a lot of fun. It's called the Hoot and Holler Dinner Show. I think the whole family would enjoy it. Here they have Italian specialties instead of barbecue for a change, but they have a real clever show. It's very fast-paced. They bring people up on the stage, and everyone just has a real good time.
That's fun. I mean, there seems to be an awful lot of variety there, and that's great.
There's the Comedy Barn, and again, that's G-rated. It's, you know, there's no R-rated comedy there,
right.
So you can keep that in mind for the whole family.
Now, you also mentioned about Holson's Helicopter Museum. That sounds quite interesting.
Yes, it just opened less than a year ago, and it was quite impressive. They're still adding to the collection, but they have real helicopters there. They have exhibits, interactive displays, videos. They show videos from the different world wars, showing the helicopters, and you get to explore the history of helicopter aviation.
And they even offer rides, don't they?
They do. You can take a scenic helicopter tour, which with my vertigo, I would not do that. But I've heard it's very, very nice. It takes you over the foothills of the Smokies and the valleys, and it's supposed to be a very nice tour.
And I think it's important that you mention that just 10 minutes from Pigeon Forge, you're really smack dab in the middle of the wonders of the Smokies, as you put it.
Absolutely. And it's a lovely place to be. If people have never been to the Smokies, it's definitely worth a trip to drive up. You can hear the mountain stream trickling down. You can sit on a bench and enjoy it. There are also places to picnic and to camp. And then you know, just go back down the mountain into Pigeon Forge.
And you say you can hike or you can rent a canoe or all of those things.
Yes, all those things are available in the Smoky Mountains, which is run, of course, by the National Park Service.
Now, what was interesting is that you have a paragraph that says, a portrait of a popular travel and tourist destination. And as the name suggests, Pigeon Forge began to develop as an industry-based town when the furnace in Irish Ford became its industrial core. And then, of course, that was before the arrival of the... and then you say, for centuries, before the arrival of Europeans on the continent, what today is Pigeon Ford was also a productive hunting ground.
Mm-hmm, it was.
For the Native Americans, and which was, what, particularly the Cherokee Nation, I guess.
Yes, the Cherokees were in that area.
And... they opened the Great Smoky Mountain National Park when in 1935, I believe you say.
Yes, that's correct.
And then it's just gone on. It's just gone on from there, and a great destination. For those that are listening and might like to visit the area, okay, can you give them some pointers or some reference online?
Yes, absolutely. The website is www.mypigeonforge.com, and an 800 number, which of course is toll free, is 1-800-251-9100. And Dollywood is www.dollywood.com.
Well, that's terrific. It's a great article, and again, for those that are listening, you can go to our site, ttrn.com, and you can read Kay's article in depth. Okay, it's always a pleasure. Where did you say you are now?
I'm in Stone Mountain, Georgia right now.
Well, that sounds like you go to the nicest places.
With a lot of nice people.
Exactly. Well, we'll look forward to chatting about that one day.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Kay. And,
thank you very much.
Bye for now. I appreciate you taking the time out.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Kay, Harwell Fernandez, always great fun, and... when we come back, where are we when we come back, Mike? We're The Wonder Woman, Suzanne Wright, will be with us, so don't go away.
Totally gone native. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again. Oh, yeah.
Well, and I guess you can judge by that theme song, Wonder Woman Suzanne Wright is about to join us. And it's always a pleasure to welcome Suzanne. And we're going to chat about culinary travel in Jordan. Welcome home, and thank you for joining us on Talking Travel today, Suzanne.
Hey, Roy.
It was a long trip back, yeah?
You know the old saying, it's easy to get there, hard to get back.
Yeah.
That's right. But it was a great trip, and a wonderful experience.
Well,
you know, you were there.
I was there, yeah. What we're going to talk about, as I understand it, we're going to talk about the culinary travel, which we've already mentioned. But what I think that people need to know that in spite of all the exotic foods, there's still the basics. You know, you still have your continental restaurants, you still have your McDonald's, but we're going to take it to another level, are we not?
We are always taking it to another level, Roy. I mean, one of the big lures, as you well know, of traveling in the Middle East is the fantastic food opportunities that await. So, I personally think it would be nuts to go to McDonald's, but yes, that is there, and certainly most of the hotels that our listeners would be staying in Jordan, 3-, 4-, 5-star level hotels are going to offer all the continental food that you know you could get at home.
Exactly. And then let's go to the next level. Why don't you start? I don't have any script for this.
Because I haven't written anything for you. That's why I don't have a script. I literally just, so listeners know, I literally just got back in town and sort of recovering on Sunday, so I just haven't been able to pull anything together. But I've got some notes, and I thought a good place to start is with the Middle Eastern version of tapas, or small plates, or appetizers,
right.
Is called meza. And meza might possibly be a word derived from the Persian, which means taste or relish. And meza are found actually not just in the Middle East, but extending all the way through the Mediterranean. You can find meza, both hot and cold, on menus in Turkey, in Greece. You can find them in Morocco, so throughout North Africa, you know, all that sort of Mediterranean area. And it's just a fantastic way to eat. Extremely healthy, provides a lot of energy, and it's inexpensive. You know, the big bonus for folks is, you know, it's a very inexpensive, authentic, local way to eat. So I just jotted down some things that I had in Jordan that listeners might want to check out if they make it to that part of the world. So things that we can find like in our grocery store that we easily are familiar with, things like hummus, which is the chickpea dip that's very, very popular. I mean, you know, if you've got a Whole Foods, you've got, you know, or you've got a Kroger or a Publix, you can definitely buy prepackaged, but there's nothing right. like having it freshly made.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
Presented in these bowls with beautiful lemon slices and a swirl of olive oil on top that was, you know, probably just pressed and bottled, you know, 20 kilometers down the road.
And it seemed to me that in almost every meal, these
right.
types of dishes preceded the entree.
Yes. So they would be like, in America, they would be like our version of an appetizer.
Exactly.
They are
and
meant to sort of stimulate your appetite.
Exactly.
And so you will get, typically you will sit down, and as you said, you'll get maybe 6 or 8 bowls of different kinds of meza. So you can expect to see, as I said, the chickpea dip called hummus. You can expect to see baba ganoush, which is the smoky eggplant dip. And that's always provided with fresh, incredibly well-baked pita bread. And if you haven't had fresh, well-baked pita bread at the source, you will not believe it. It bears no resemblance to what we buy in the grocery store.
Yeah, it sure is.
Unbelievable. You will also likely get grilled vegetables. So you might get zucchini. You might get peppers that are grilled. Very simply grilled, brushed with olive oil. You know, red and yellow peppers. You will also likely get tabbouleh, which is a really light salad that is based with bulgur wheat, cracked bulgur wheat, which is a tiny, tiny grain, very light, much lighter than couscous even, that's chopped together with parsley and tomatoes and lemon juice and mint. So that's very fresh. And, you know, as you experienced, I mean, Jordan is a warm weather climate, so this kind of eating is meant to be refreshing. And tabbouleh is a great example of that. You might get cheese. You might get a feta cheese, or you might get a halloumi cheese that's served. And something that I discovered that I had not had before, which I thought was fantastic, is called shanklish, which is an aged cow or sheep milk cheese that's kind of rolled into tiny balls and then covered with some spices. I want to talk a little bit more about the spices in a moment, called za'atar. And then it's very pungent. The cheese kind of would be somewhat like a gorgonzola. It would have that kind of flavor profile, kind of a rich, pungent profile. And then it would be tossed with olive oil and onions and diced tomatoes. Really terrific.
Yeah, and you know, the preparation is fun and wonderful, which I'm sure you're going to get to a little bit later.
Yes, absolutely. I want to tell you about my cooking class, for sure. So yeah, and then you might even get something like fattoush, which is a wonderful sort of basic, if you will, salad, you know, with lettuce and tomatoes and onions and olives. But then it's topped with fried pita strips. So it just has
right.
a nice textural
right, exactly.
contrast. Really terrific. So, and of course, you might get falafel, which some listeners may know that falafel is, that's a vegetarian-friendly dish, as are all these dishes, really. We
right.
haven't talked about any meat-based dishes. But that's fried chickpeas, often wrapped in a sandwich and served with tahini sauce, which is made from sesame seeds. So, you know, just really incredible. And yeah, certainly if people have, you know, food challenges, this is all very stomach-friendly kinds of stuff. And I wanted to mention za'atar because I fell in love with it when we were, you know, in Amman. We ate it in Amman, in the capital. We ate at a restaurant that made fresh baked bread with this amazing brushed olive oil, and then topped with this spice mixture that is just incredible. I brought home several packets of it, but it's easy to make. It's basically dried thyme with toasted sesame seeds, sumac, and perhaps just the tiniest bit of chili. And it's, again, it just wakes up your taste buds. It's just an incredible light and very flavorful and just rich, aromatic. When it's baking, it smells incredible, kind of you know, bread. I mean, again,
yeah.
It doesn't bear any resemblance to the bread baskets we get at home.
Right, exactly. It's just wonderful. You're absolutely right.
So So yeah, so that's the story there. And then, you know, an interesting thing too is, you know, let's be honest, I was in Jordan for 10 days. I certainly succumbed to more than one continental omelet, you know,
right,
at the breakfast buffet.
Right.
But I would encourage listeners to try, again, another Middle Eastern breakfast staple is called foul, F-O-U-L. And that's basically boiled fava beans, which doesn't sound very good and is rather simple and bland. But then it's the condiments that you put on top, onions, chili, tomato, olive oil. And it is incredibly, again, it's protein rich. It really keep you going as you're touring. And it's wonderful. And I mean, it's beautifully served. It's served usually in a clay vessel. And it's you just sort of scoop out the beans and then add your own seasonings to taste. So that's tremendous.
Now, did you find that at the hotels, even at the breakfast buffets, they had a lot of variety of this type
Absolutely.
Of food as well. So you could experiment and really enjoy the culture. And
Absolutely. And then, you know, if you're experimenting at breakfast, I mean, za'atar was often served at breakfast, the bread I was just talking about with the spices. You can try it at your buffet, which is often, you know, included in the American plan at your hotel,
right,
and decide if that's something then that you want to order and explore, you know, when you're out at your own on a restaurant.
That's exactly right, yes. And then not only that, but when you get to talk to some of the waiters that around the buffet, and they do explain what it's all about, then when you are in the restaurant, you can order, as you say, you can order these things, and it's wonderful.
And you really get a big thumbs up from the regional visitors. I mean, I cannot tell you how many Middle Eastern travelers and travelers in the region, in the Gulf states, in the Arab states, actually said, oh, you like foul, or oh, you like za'atar. Yes, yes, I love it. So, you know, it's another way of, you know, food of building bridges is a really good conduit for...
And they know you've immersed yourself into the culture. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, sure, you know, just mix it up. Have your omelet one day and try your beans the next day. And I want to put in a little plug on the other end of the meal. So you start with these amazing appetizers, and then you're going to have amazing shish kebabs and lamb dishes, and we don't have time to go into all those. But there are some incredible desserts that listeners should really be on the lookout for as well. Roy, you probably know very well baklava, which, again, is a dessert that's made with honey and crushed nuts.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Wonderful phyllo dough, very, very rich, very... sticky and wonderful. There, of course, you'll find baklava throughout Jordan, but you'll also find some other really interesting desserts that utilize rose water as a beautiful aromatic and flavorful addition to something like, say, a milk-based pudding or a custard.
Right.
And I know you remember those
from
eating in Jordan, and they're just an incredible culinary taste, and one that we don't often get to have in our culture here in the U.S. So.
Well, and the other helpful thing, I was Giselli with you. I don't know who.
Yes, yes, sure. For a lot of the meals, right?
Right, and probably Abraham, and they took the time to explain to us as we went along about some of these dishes And that made it a lot easier.
Absolutely. Oh, and, you know, I want to tell you, Abraham took us to one of the top experiences for me was I love eating street food. And we went in Amman to just, you know, a vendor, literally sort of a storefront vendor. And
right,
there were people lined up on the street of all ages. You know, I'm talking about, you know, kids just off motorcycles to businessmen in suits, who were eating these, and I couldn't quite catch the name of the food, but it was sweetened goat cheese with shredded dough on top and then covered in honey and pistachios and just served very simply on a paper plate, and I think it was the equivalent of a quarter.
Yeah, you have the whole production room here nodding their heads saying, yes, that sounds great. Now, I want to tell you one other thing, because we're running a little short on time. We need to talk about the Petra Kitchen.
Oh, fantastic.
And now, let me just share something with you.
Sure.
On Skype, we've advised the owner of Petra Kitchen that we're on, and he is now listening live. So he's going to enjoy the next segment. So let's go straight to the Petra Kitchen and your cooking lesson.
Oh, great.
In
well, this was really a highlight. First of all, any visitor to Jordan will, of course, make a pilgrimage to Petra, which is, you know, believed to be one of the eighth wonders of the world. So it's incredible. And right there in the shadows of this amazing rose pink sandstone architectural wonder is the Petra Kitchen. And we showed up in Mass, our group showed up in Mass, and we started chopping and we started dicing and we started squeezing lemons.
In your little apron.
Cooking sauces. And Chef Tariq was so much fun. And we had such a great time. We made, I've got our menu here, we made, and it was really fun because all the things that I've mentioned are so easy to make. What's really great about Middle Eastern cooking is a lot of it is super simple, few ingredients. Much of it does not even have to be cooked.
I was a little slow on the chopping.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I kept all my digits, which I thought was the important thing. But we made lentil soup, which was terrific. I'm looking at it. It had 8 ingredients. I mean, it was super easy. We made a wonderful eggplant dip. We made the classic Arabic salad, which is, you know, basically mint, pepper, tomatoes, cucumbers, and parsley. Lots of chopping.
Yep.
We made tabbouleh.
Right.
We made, one of the folks in our group made these amazing cheese, baked cheese triangles that were stuffed with a combination of cheeses, including feta, and then baked until they were golden brown. We made a chicken dish that was fantastic with rice and, you know, could have served literally the whole block. Might have served all the tourists that, you know, poured out of Petra that afternoon. Just very generous, which, again, hospitality in the Middle East is really unparalleled. And we just had so much fun. It was just a great, great opportunity because the Petra Kitchen is not a restaurant. It's a place to go to learn culinary techniques. And we had each table for our group only had like 3 or 4 people around it.
Yep.
So we had the attention of Chef Tariq, who's, you know, going from table to table along with his assistants. And then, of course, the advantage is we got to sit down and eat our, you know.
And a cold beer didn't hurt.
No, you know what? Listeners have to absolutely know about St. George wine. It is an amazing red table wine produced in Jordan in one of the areas we went to. I think it was Mahaba. And that's just a great red drinking wine that, you know, I'd stack it up against the best French table wines or Chilean table wines.
Well, what's also interesting is right now I'm getting Skype messages from the gang at the Petra Kitchen saying, tell her hi, and we enjoyed her company. So,
well, I enjoyed it too. And in fact, if readers will log on to my website, www.wanderwomanonline.com, I will very shortly have some pictures up of the cooking school.
That's great.
Yes, absolutely, because we had a great time, and it was fun to be able to say, hey, we can make this repast at home for our friends and family.
And they were lovely people and very hospitable and made us feel like family, did they not?
You bet. You said it. I mean, that was just the feeling we had throughout the entire region. Nothing but friendly, you're welcome to our country, you're welcome to our region, we want to share with you what we have to offer. So it was a tremendous experience.
Absolutely. Suzanne, we've got to run. I thank you very much. It was a fun chat, and it's nice just to wing it as we did. And I think people will look forward to experiencing those types of things, and hopefully they will. I'm glad to know that there's a website with this information on, and
absolutely.
We will see that information gets up on ours. So,
that's
bye
great.
For now, and welcome back.
Thanks so much, Roy. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Suzanne Wright, just back from Jordan, and it is an amazing experience. We all really enjoyed it, and the cooking school, as they called it, at the Petra Kitchen. Everyone was so hospitable, and we thank you all very much. Live here on air, coming directly from Sarasota, Florida, and streaming worldwide on the web at ttrn.com. Stay with us. We're going to go to break, and as soon as we come back, we're going to be joined by Stephanie Moreland, who has an interesting article on St. Augustine. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is the story of Bob and Elaine. The daily grind was driving them insane.
We need to get away. A change of a location. Not just a trip, but an exciting vacation.
You're right. Pack your bags. The ride's nice and short. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport.
Fly Sky Value nonstop from Gary Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete Clearwater, Tampa, Mesa, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary Chicago Airport is quick as can be. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Flying Sky Value is the way to go.
For hassle-free flights that save lots of dough.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
Sugar. Well, we're back, and St. Augustine is the subject of travel journalist Stephanie Moreland's article entitled A European Travel Experience in Florida. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello, Roy. How are you today?
Great. We're a little bit late getting to you because Suzanne was just arriving from Jordan, so it took her a little while to get off the airplane.
Oh, dear. Yeah. So.
What a great article. I've just...
Thank you.
As I was reading through it, first of all, I got a whole history lesson, and that was wonderful. And as you know, although I've had invitations, I've never had the opportunity to get over to St. Augustine, and I hope they're listening to us, because I would like to do that, and especially after reading your article. So you were saying there are a lot of things that you didn't know about St. Augustine, and certainly I don't know anything. I do now.
There was a lot about St. Augustine that I did not know, yes.
Except you knew how to find it on a map.
Yes. I knew where it was on a map, which actually maybe I ought to share with people where it's located. For those listeners that don't know, it's actually on the northeast coast of Florida. And it's actually in a very prime location because it's about 45 minutes from Daytona Beach and only an hour and a half from Orlando. And it's very close to Jacksonville. It's about 35 miles south of Jacksonville, too. So it's an easy place to get to in Florida. And I think there's maybe still a lot of Floridians that haven't gone, and especially people outside of Florida maybe don't know that much about St. Augustine.
And for one thing, that it's the oldest city in America, as you
yes.
say.
And many don't know that. It's termed the oldest city because it's the oldest and continually occupied European settlement. And it was actually founded in 1565. Florida was discovered by Juan Ponce de Leon in 1513, and he claimed it as the property of Spain, and he called it La Florida, which means the land of the flowers. And so then, right after, in 1565, Pedro Menendez de Avilés was the one who landed in St. Augustine and claimed it for Spain. So since that time, it's been a continually occupied European settlement, and it's been successful, although several attempts were made to make it unsuccessful. It still has survived, so much of the history still exists in St. Augustine, and you can still, of course, see some of the older buildings and the older architecture, which makes it such a beautiful, beautiful city to visit.
Well, what's interesting is that I didn't realize that they went through all of these various changes over the years, from the Spanish to the English to the French.
Yes,
I mean it's
five
just
five different flags have flown over St. Augustine,
and
there's a little bit of history. I mean, you know, you can see evidence to all of that when you visit St. Augustine, which is what's so fascinating about it.
And Pedro Menendez is known as the founding father, I understand.
Yes, he is known as the founding father, and it's St. Augustine got its name in honor of St. Augustine de Hippo, and August 28th, which is the day that Pedro Menendez actually landed, it was St. Augustine's feast day, so that's how St. Augustine earned its name. And so after that, of course, you know, Pedro Menendez brought about 700 colonists with him, and they continuously just tried to create a settlement that would survive the British, and then survive the pirates, and then survive the British again. And So it's St. Augustine's been through a whole lot and still survived.
And
it really has a fascinating history. There are actually over 60 historic sites and attractions in St. Augustine, so there's plenty of things to do to fill your time.
Right, and who actually named the city after the saint? Was it Admiral Pedro Menendez?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
So.
And you say also in your article that it's this nation's oldest and continually occupied European settlement, which is interesting.
Yes, that is very interesting because there, of course, have been other settlements like Jamestown and others, and many of them actually failed, but this one was able to survive. And one of the reasons that it did survive is the Spanish built a big fort called Castillo de San Marcos, which is a national monument, which is also the oldest man-made national monument, by the way, in the United States.
Right.
But they began building it in 1672, and it was constructed of something called coquina, which is it's a locally shell rock, and it's very ideal because it doesn't crumble under cannon fire. So I think a lot of their success was because of this fort that they built. There was at one point the British actually, you know, laid siege upon St. Augustine, and all of the colonists actually fled to the fort and stayed there for 50 days and
right.
survived. So
now, if we could just stop there for a second, I'd just like to back up a little bit because I think the the history of all of this is really quite interesting for our listeners. In your article, you say in 1586, Englishman, of course, Francis Drake burned the town to the ground, and then
yes.
it was soon rebuilt. And then in 1668, it was nearly destroyed again by John Davis the pirate.
Yes.
And then yet again, by order of Maria of Mariana of Spain, they constructed a new stone fort. This is what you're talking about, is that Castillo de San Marcos
yes.
In 1672, which was built out of this coquina, which is quite popular in Florida. We have beaches here named coquina, so
yes.
it's a very popular shell type material.
Yes, and it's a lot of fortified walls and things like that, too. I guess they learned over the years that
right.
they were just going to keep getting attacked, so they needed to do something.
So it went on again. In 1702, the English troops, for 50 days, the fort, as you say, was fired on, and they left the... What did they burn the rest of the city to
they
the ground,
the
I guess,
They burned the rest
yeah.
of the city. So sadly, the people survived, the fort survived, but... The city did not, so as a result, actually in St. Augustine, there are no homes or buildings older than 1702
right.
for that reason, which is very sad, but they still, obviously, they were not quitters, and they just kept at it, and they eventually rebuilt St. Augustine, of course, again.
Right. And so it's gone through some interesting turmoil over the years, and let's move on from there. England divided the territory in two segments. St. Augustine became the new capital of East Florida, as you say.
Yes, yes. And
the England occupation only lasted what, 21 days?
Yeah, it was 21 years. It was
21 years.
Short
I'm sorry.
Period of time.
Yeah.
And then it was actually transferred back to Spain. Again.
Good Lord.
And then for 37 years that happened, so Spain ruled after
right.
that. And eventually, 1821, it was transferred to Spain, from Spain to the United States by the Adams-Onis Treaty.
Well, because then came...
And then it went through the Seminole Wars after that.
Right. Then, as you say, then came Andrew Jackson... who,
yes.
ignoring the international border, burned native villages and executed two British subjects. And then captured St. Mark's and Pensacola and finally sorted out in 1821 and when Florida was transferred from Spain to the United States. It's a very, very interesting
yes.
history.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then, of course, the Seminole Wars were another turbulent period
right.
During the 1830s. And then in 1845... Florida finally became the 27th state of the Union.
Right. So over 200 years, as you say, St. Augustine has endured fire, turmoil, strife, and five different flags, which you can still see today, you say.
Yes, absolutely. And it has a much richer, older history than so many of the cities in the United States, which makes it so unique. It makes it such a unique destination. And the Spanish colonial influence is very evident when you walk through St. Augustine, and you can still see it in the buildings and the architecture and, of course, the history. And there's a lot of storytellers in St. Augustine. So it has a very obviously strong European influence that is still evident today. I still have yet to see anything like that anywhere else in the United States.
Well, in fact, you say in your article, for a short time during your visit, you almost forgot that you were in the United States.
Yes, I did.
Now,
it was wonderful. And it was only a four-hour drive for me. So, you know, it's definitely a destination people should take advantage of. It has a little bit of everything. It's not, I mean, I really focused a lot on the history in the article just to give people an understanding of how far back St. Augustine really does go. But it's such a, you know, what I love about Europe the most is, like I say in my article, the blending of the old and the new and the integration of history and culture. And many cities in Europe carry that off so well. And so in St. Augustine, you really get a little bit of everything. You know, you can go and become completely immersed in the history and the culture, but at the same time, it's a very sophisticated city. Of course, I talk in my article about the art scene and the restaurant scene in St. Augustine, and so it's very trendy. There's a lot of upscale, fun places to go and things to do, so you really get a little bit of everything, which is what I have always loved about the places I've been to in Europe.
And you, let's just chat a little bit about Henry Flagler's influence on the architecture.
Henry Flagler was actually he's played a big role in Florida's history, not just St. Augustine's
history.
But he is actually the co-founder of Standard Oil, along with John D. Rockefeller. So he was incredibly wealthy, and during the winter of 1888, he actually visited St. Augustine and fell in love with it. And he recognized it as a potential travel destination. You know, he saw the charm, the history, and everything that it had to offer, but he felt that a lot of the accommodation and the public transportation was inadequate for what he deemed as a big travel destination for people. So he just began to build a series of hotels, humongous, beautiful hotels, and he did a lot for St. Augustine. He did a lot for Miami as well, too. He's called the father of Miami as well, which is another story in itself. But so many of his buildings, his original buildings, are still there, and you can see, you know, go and actually learn a lot about Henry Flagler, because he played a big role in Florida history.
Right, and of course the Florida East Coast Railway, which he built, went all the way down into Palm Beach in those days. It was the only way you could travel, so he really opened it all up. But what's interesting is that you mentioned that some of the historic buildings that he originally started, for example, Flagler College was formerly the Hotel Ponce de Leon, which was built by him.
And I tell you, when I saw that college, I really hoped that's where I had gone to school. I kept thinking those students were very lucky to go there. It's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful building.
And
it's incredible.
You mentioned Casa Monica Hotel.
Yes.
Which was
formerly the Cordova Hotel.
Cordova. And then the Leitner Museum.
Yes.
Which was what, the Alcazar Hotel, I guess, at one point.
Yes, it's a must-see.
And then the Memorial Presbyterian Church.
Yes. And that was a memorial to his daughter, actually. And there's so many others. I just included a few. But the architecture in St. Augustine, if nothing else, you know, that's a reason to go. Because it's again, like I said, the Spanish colonial influence is so strong. And Flagler really knew that. Of course, he knew all about the history of St. Augustine. And I think that influenced the way he designed, you know, the hotels and things that he built as well. So it's very, that's a big theme in St. Augustine.
Let's touch on the art, if you will, because you say there's a lot of the thriving arts community that attracted hundreds of artists.
Oh yeah, it was actually at one point the largest art colony in the southern U.S. During the 30s, between 1930 and 1950. And still today, it has a very large arts community. St. Augustine actually has over 25 galleries and studios in the area. Many of them, obviously, shops where you can go and buy artwork.
Right.
And I think there's over 230 local artists in St. Augustine as well. So it was quite an art mecca at one time and still is, and just a fabulous place, for people that are art lovers. Definitely a great destination for people who just, even if you spend all of your time doing that, it would take you quite some time to get through 25 galleries.
Right. Now we can go back, let's just go back to the culinary culture.
Okay.
And you say that that you've had all ethnic groups that pass through there from the Spanish, the Italian, the French, the Greeks, the Germans, the Asians, the Swiss, Southern Florida, your cracker food. That is, obviously what makes a great mix of dining fun.
It's a gastronomic paradise, that's
yep,
for sure.
Absolutely.
It has everything from, country cooking to award-winning American and international cuisine.
Well, let's mention a couple, if you will.
I'm sorry?
Well, let's mention a couple of these places, restaurants.
Well, one of the places I visited was the Palm Cafe and Bakery. Oh, and it was just absolutely delicious. Had a very relaxed but very trendy ambiance. And, obviously they had a very small menu, but Chef Aaron Miles, who is kind of a hot new chef, is the chef at the Palm Cafe and Bakery. And, it was just absolutely wonderful. I did go to Kingfish Grill, which is actually has a beautiful view of the Intercoastal Waterway, and it's a big seafood restaurant right on the water. They have outside seating, and we had such a good time. It was just a beautiful atmosphere. The weather was beautiful, and the food is to die for. And I did actually go to Claude's Chocolate. I was able to take a tour, and I saw how they actually make their chocolate. And Claude is a renowned French chef, and he and his wife moved down from France and opened a chocolatier, and just delicious handmade chocolate. We got to sip a little bit of homemade hot chocolate as well. So, and of course, I'm a chocolate lover, so I was in heaven. And then we did get to eat at a restaurant called Athena Restaurant, and again, I love Greek food. And they actually, I believe, they manufacture their own olive oil as well. And they sell that online, and it's just delicious. So, and that's just a few. I mean, there are so many restaurants. You could eat your way through St. Augustine very easily. I would have if I could have stayed.
Right. Well, I would have been right alongside, I can tell you. I've certainly enjoyed that. And I'm going to keep this article, so when I do make a trip over there, I'm going to look up some of these places. And then you go on to say that there's lots of hiking, biking, kayaking, sailing, shell collecting, parasailing, fishing, surfing. It's all there.
Oh, yeah. Ecotourism is huge there. There's so much that you could do outdoors, and it's a very temperate city. I don't think people realize that, but it has an average temperature of like 70 degrees throughout the year, and in the summer I think an average high of 81 in July and August. So even to get away from the summer, get a break from the summer Florida heat or wherever else you're from, it's a great place to be outdoors. And it's very near Anastasia Island, and so there's a lot to do, obviously, between those two. There's like 42 miles of, and of course, I'm sorry, near Pontevedra too. And so between those three, there's actually 42 miles of oceanside. So, swimming, surfing, shell collecting, kayaking, like I say in my article, it's all there.
Right.
Everything you can do.
And
great place to go dolphin washing.
Let's just, if we might, just before we go, let's touch on a couple of places to stay, and then maybe we'll go to a website so people can do some research.
Okay. I can tell you the place that I stayed was the Casa de la Paz, which is a bed and breakfast. I highly recommend staying in one of the bed and breakfasts. I had the opportunity to really tour and see a lot of them, and each of the places to stay has a history within itself, all tied to St. Augustine in some way. Of course, many of them are haunted, which is something interesting to know. So that just adds to the fun. They're just beautifully, you know, beautifully decorated and antiques, and the people are so accommodating, and it's so interesting to talk to the owners of these bed and breakfasts because they're so proud of their city and what they have to offer, and they can really tell you a lot about St. Augustine, a lot more than what you would learn just by looking it up. So I recommend a bed and breakfast.
Okay, and these are all, for those that are listening at home, if you go to Stephanie's article, they're all listed there. And just before we go, let's give some of our listeners some information on how they might find their way there, and maybe a couple of the websites that would be helpful for research.
Okay. Actually, down at the very bottom of my article, they the official website for the city of St. Augustine is on my article, and also the best place probably is St. Augustine, Ponte Vedra, and the beaches, Visitors and Convention Bureau. So definitely want to check out that website. And then for places to stay, if they're looking for the bed and breakfast, probably the Inns of Elegance.com is the best website to go to.
Okay, and very, 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 very good article, Stephanie. And
thank you.
I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to visiting there one of these fine days. And once again, there's some great photos if you you care to go to our website, and you can read Stephanie's article in depth. Stephanie, we're going to say bye for now, and hope to be chatting with you again soon. I understand you're off to a wonderful summer adventure through Europe, or in a very short time. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure I'll have lots of stories to tell from that, too.
Well, we certainly look forward to them. Thanks, Steph.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show.
A pleasure. Bye for now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Travel Journalist Stephanie Moreland. Great article. Please, if you have a moment, take the time to go to our website and have a read through it. We've got to go. Let me just see what we've got here for you for next week. First of all, you're listening to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network, TTRN.com, and the World Travel and Dining Channel. My guests next week are going to be Evan Eggers, Anila Schwartzberg, Kay Harwell Fernandez will be with us again, and the one and only Johnny Jett. So until then, this is Roy Lowy saying bye for now and happy travel.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at TTRN.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott, Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.